This is 89.9 WWNO New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll talk about the inaugural concert that hopes to raise awareness for the Sixth Amendment right to counsel, share one of NOLA life stories, and we'll share information about New Orleans Entrepreneur Week. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. In Louisiana, people arrested for serious crimes who can't afford a lawyer often are put on a waiting list for representation. It's been reported that public defenders handle more than 80% of criminal cases in the state. To raise awareness to this constitutional crisis, the Orleans Public Defenders are kicking off the inaugural Concerts for Indigent Defense. Joining me now is Lindsay Hortenstein and Stephen Saloom. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Stephen.
Thanks for having us.
I'd like to begin by addressing the importance of the Orleans Public Defenders and who you guys represent.
We represent more than 85% of all the accused people that come through Orleans Parish. The vast majority, I mean all of our clients, but the vast majority of all of them are poor. They are marginalized. They are disenfranchised, but they are members of our community, and they are people that have been accused of varying levels of crimes.
Yeah. In a state known as the world's prison capital, let's talk about the caseload that public defenders see on a daily basis.
New Orleans, you are right, is the prison capital of the world. We incarcerate more people per capita than anywhere else. And we see in 2016, we had over 20,000 cases.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know that public defenders in Louisiana, specifically in New Orleans, are immensely underfunded and understaffed.
Yeah.
Lindsay, how bad is it?
It's pretty bad. You know, we were kind of at peak crisis mode this time last year. It was the beginning of 2016 where we actually started refusing cases. We took that drastic step that we'd never done before. And we said, you know, we are not going to be party to this processing system any longer. We can no longer do an ethical and adequate job representing our cases. And we are likely doing more damage taking on cases that we can't handle than by saying, no, we can't. And that was a really tough place to be.
That was during a time where you guys actually had to drop a bunch of felony cases.
Yeah. You know, and no one becomes a public defender to say, I can't help. And there's nothing that I can do. And so this was, I think that it was a decision that still weighs very, very heavily both on and our office and our individual attorneys as well. But yeah, things are beginning to level out some, but the crisis is not over. Until there is real parity within our criminal justice system, both locally and across the state, we're going to continue to find ourselves in these situations.
Yeah, the crisis is continuing and, in my opinion, worsening. Would you agree?
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
As much as this topic hits home for folks in this city, you guys are now pushing a nationwide effort to raise awareness for the fundamental Sixth Amendment right to counsel with the inaugural Concerts for Indigent Defense. I have Stephen Saloom on the line. Stephen, tell us more about the concert happening this Saturday.
Sure. Well, it's going to be at Wonderland Production Studios on 3233 St. Bernard, Saturday night, starting at 5 o'clock. There's no cover. And it will also be simulcast over our website, concertsforindigentdefense.org. And it features a range of emerging local talent from New Orleans and will be interspersed with statements from the musicians talking about what their experiences have been with the public defense system, with the criminal justice system, and why they felt it important to offer their own musical performance in support of proper public defense.
Absolutely. And so these concerts that you're behind, the concerts are a nationwide effort. Why was it so important for you to kick it off right here in New Orleans?
Well, New Orleans represents not only the worst of the problem as it exists in so many levels in America in terms of the failures of this constitutional right. It also has one of the most thriving musical communities in the country. And there's actually an intersection between many people in the music community and at various points in various ways, the criminal justice system.
Absolutely.
And so those factors all came together along with my friends John Thompson from Resurrection After Exoneration, and the friend that he introduced me to, John Moore of Wonderland Production Studios, and the two of them were just as committed as I was to launching Concerts for Indigent Defense. And they being in New Orleans, we worked together over the past 6 months quite intensively to set this up, and the Public Defender's Office has been fantastic in supporting this, and they're our spotlight agency for Concerts for Indigent Defense this year. So on every level, it just worked.
With all of that said about the musicians and the relationship here in New Orleans, what can we expect this weekend at the concert?
Oh, well, there will be a lot of heartfelt performances by some amazing local talent who've selected the music they'll be playing and the comments they'll be sharing based on their commitment to really improving the quality of this constitutional right for all New Orleanians.
Yeah. And specifically, the show will feature some performances by one of my favorite female brass bands, the original Panettes Brass Band. Am I correct, Lindsay?
You are. We're really very excited to be a part of it and to have been a part of getting it launched. Xena Moses and the Rufaia, Karen Green, Kazmay, Justin Parker, Dedrick West, Kay Levy, Junko Beat, which we are personally very excited about because one of the members is our own Will Snowden.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a really, really amazing night full of, like Steve said, some really great New Orleans local talent, musicians and artists, and it's something not to miss.
Mm-hmm. Now, before I get you guys out of here, Stephen, you mentioned it earlier, but I couldn't help but notice the concert happening on the 54th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Gideon versus Wainwright. Let's talk about the importance of that landmark ruling.
Sure. And that is the case where the Supreme Court decided it could no longer allow defendants to be brought before the court without the ability to have an effective lawyer representing them in a criminal proceeding. And it relates to what I just discussed previously in terms of the court recognized that right because it knew that our justice system simply cannot dispense justice if one side of the story cannot be properly told to the court in the way it needs to hear it. And that's why they established this fundamental constitutional right to counsel for anyone accused of a crime, even if you can't afford your own lawyer. It's not an act of charity to establish this right. It's in the self-interest of America and our values that we can fairly judge controversies, in this case criminal cases, brought before us, and that our system can do justice based on a fair hearing of both sides of the story. Short of that, we will not have justice in America. And that's not the America that we all aspire to.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, Steve's exactly right. You know, the right to counsel was a fundamental right, you know, set up long before 54 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's the original 10. You know, it's what our country is founded on. You know, one of our first public defenders was John Adams, who, whether he called himself a public defender or not, I don't know. But he defended the British soldiers at the Boston Massacre. And Steve's right. The fundamental piece of our criminal justice system is a fair and balanced court proceeding. And that doesn't happen without a lawyer. It's not happening across the state. It's not happening across this country because public defenders are out-resourced. They are underpaid. They are far outworked with their caseloads. And that is not justice. That is simply a processing system. And so where we're continuing to push this is we're 54 years down the road, but I don't know that we're 54 years better.
Exactly. And that's the scary thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That really is. And I think the important thing to remember is, you know, these people through the system, exactly like we said at the beginning, they are citizens of New Orleans. They are citizens of Louisiana. They are citizens of every city and rural area in this country. And they are innocent until proven guilty. And so it's up to us to ensure that justice is done, meaning that the right person is accused with the right crime and sentenced for the right time. And too often that's not happening because there isn't that entity, that defense system, to ensure and holding the entire system accountable to ensure that they're doing that job. And the burden is on them to prove that. So,
Lindsay, Stephen, thank you so much for stopping by on today.
You are most welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
That was Lindsay Hortenstein, Development Director for the Orleans Public Defenders, and Stephen Saloom, founder of Concert for Indigent Defense. The inaugural Concert for Indigent Defense will take place Saturday, March 18th at 5 p.m. at Wonderland Production Studios. A scientist and a poet might seem like an unlikely pair to write movies, but when Joyce Corrington and her late husband Bill began to collaborate, their stories took on three dimensions. Joyce and Bill's screenwriting career transported them from New Orleans to LA and back again into post-apocalyptic worlds on page and screen. In this edition of NOLA Life Stories, Joyce's narrative begins during her time as an engineering student at Rice University in the 1950s.
I was walking through the lounge one day and Bill saw me and said to his friends, "Oh, who is that?" And they said, "Oh, that's Joyce Hooper, but don't mess with her, she's weird." So since I went and got on the elevator to go up into the library, he ran up the stairs and we were together thereafter. He was a poet when we met at Rice. He had actually struck up a friendship just by mail with Charles Bukowski, who's become a very well-known poet. And they corresponded back and forth, and I kept the correspondence, and it was really a wonderful correspondence. They were each writing these long letters to each other, back in the days when people wrote letters.
Anyway, it was 2 or 3 weeks later when I got this letter from William saying that he did enjoy my reading. He was a true gentleman.
Well, we just were living over in Defuncto Estates at the time on the North Shore. And the phone rings, and this person says, "This is Roger Corman." Like, we're supposed to know him. Well, we're not movie buffs, so we didn't know him. He was quite a well-known producer. And he said, "I think you have a cinematographic imagination. Would you like to do a movie script?" So then he knocked out a draft and sent it to Roger. And Roger called him up and said, "Have you ever seen a movie script?" And Bill said, "No." He said, "Usually they're about 120 pages. You shoot about a page a minute." And his was like 220. So again, I had to cut it down, because for Bill to cut his work was like taking flesh and, not just blood, flesh and bone. So I edited it down and we began working together on that. And he was working on a project at the time with the producer Walter Seltzer and Chuck Heston to do a Mega Man.
"Because the last man on Earth is not alone."
Well, then I became much more of the plotter. We would go over to Charlie's Steakhouse and have a bottle of wine and discuss plot, and I would come home and I would write out a long scene outline of what should be there. And then Bill would do this wonderful dialogue. He could create characters with dialogue just beautifully. So we thereafter became known as science fiction writers. And therefore, we began getting offers to do science fiction stories. So we did The Last Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
"Out of the Forbidden City," they roared, "to settle once and for all who had the right to rule the planet, ape or man."
And so the producer, Arthur Jacobs, bless his heart, he had done the first one, was proud of it, done the second one, blew up the earth at the end of the second one because he didn't want to do another sequel. But it was so successful, the studio said, "We don't care if you blew up the earth, you figure out how to get around it, we want another sequel."
The battlefield, a dead city 12 years after the ultimate bomb has been dropped.
It was a weird Surprise. Thing to create something out of your head and then people run around and bring it into existence, you know? I mean, that's really pretty weird. I don't think any movie we saw were we thrilled with the production when we saw it. We had no input. Writers are not important to movies. And so they never had much influence on what gets actually produced. And we would turn in our script to the producer, and then a year or two later, we'd see the movie at the local theater. Planet of the Apes, they had somebody rewrite it so that we have a statue crying tears about the future. I was like, "Oh my God." So you'd cringe. In fact, we asked our agent, "Should we take our name off that?" He said, "No, it's earning money. You never take your name off anything that earns money."
This NOLA Life Stories interview was conducted by Mark Cave for the Historic New Orleans Collection and produced for WWNO by Sarah Holtz. New Orleans Entrepreneur Week began in 2009. Since then, NOEW has evolved into an annual festival and serves as a platform for the New Orleans entrepreneurial ecosystem as a whole. Joining me now to talk more about this unique festival experience is Victoria Adams Phipps, executive producer of New Orleans Entrepreneur Week. Victoria, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Janae.
So tell us all about NOEW and when is it?
We are so excited. We're going into the 9th New Orleans Entrepreneur Week. And New Orleans Entrepreneur Week is a 6-day festival that celebrates innovation and entrepreneurship specific to the city of New Orleans. We are inviting thought leaders from around the globe to join us to talk about the future of industry, where things are headed, and what folks need to be thinking about, whether you're a business owner or someone who dreams of owning a business one day. This year's event is coming up March 19th through the 24th. So okay. Just a few days away.
Yeah, just a few days away. You know, when one mentions NOEW, they always say it's not a conference. But when I think about an entrepreneurial week, I think about a conference immediately. What sets this experience apart from other entrepreneurial conferences in the U.S.?
Yes. Well, first and foremost, it's free. So you won't really anywhere else.
Yeah.
But we have been intentional about building it as a festival and not a conference. So if you think about when you walk through those Jazz Fest gates and there are three or four different stages of activity, different artists playing at the same time, that's the same thing you're going to get when you walk through the gates in New Orleans Entrepreneur Week.
Okay.
There will be four or five different events going on at the same time. We will have local artists actually selling their wares on site. We have incredible entertainment throughout the week. Hot 8 is joining us. Kermit Ruffins and the Barbecue Swingers are joining us.
Yeah,
so it's not your typical business event.
Right. Now, Victoria, I'm glad you mentioned those artists because they are entrepreneurs as well.
Exactly. We really have a broad definition of what it means to be an entrepreneur. I think a lot of people hear the term entrepreneur and they think of Mark Zuckerberg, you know, out in Silicon Valley with the hoodie coding away in his garage.
Right,
That's not really what we're talking about per se. An entrepreneur is anyone that has a business venture of their own. So that can be the local artist, the musician, the mom and pop hair salon owner, all the way up to the large tech companies that we've seen sprout up in the last few years.
Right.
So we have something for everyone
at
New Orleans Entrepreneur Week.
So New Orleans Entrepreneur Week kicks off March 19th. What are some of the events happening within this week? And most importantly, Victoria, is there an opening party?
Man, so we have a killer lineup of events this year. I am not even going to lie to you, Janae.
Okay.
There is an opening party, so we can talk about that first. That will be taking place on Sunday from 3 to 6 p.m., and that will be featuring Hot 8 and a slammin' barbecue, specialty cocktails. We got to set it off right.
Okay.
So that is just a good time, and we're inviting the community to come out and start the week with us. But there are a few really great events I'd love to draw attention to. First and foremost, we have a great lineup of headliners this year. Leslie Miley, who some of you might be familiar with. Leslie essentially became the face of diversity and inclusion in Silicon Valley.
Okay.
He had a very public exit from Twitter, joined the team at Slack, and most recently has joined Venture for America, building out their executive in residence program. Leslie will be joining us talking about diversity and inclusion and why that's important and valuable for everyone. We have Mickey Agrawal, who's a headliner, and she'll be talking to us about what it means to be a female founder and raising capital and the issues that we uniquely face as women in the workplace. Adrian Lanous, coming from Netflix, he oversees consumer insights. He'll be talking about leveraging word-of-mouth data with big data and how you use that to inform decisions across the board. So we have incredible speakers like those folks, but we also have a whole lineup of basic business 101 classes that will be taking place. We have networking events every night. So if you can't make it to the opening party, there's a party every night. So check the calendar for those.
And that's a party with a purpose.
Party with a purpose. And then we're closing out with The Big Idea, which is one of our signature events. It's basically a crowdfunding campaign come to life. So we'll have 10 different startups featured. Everyone that attends that event gets a $25 poker chip. You walk around, get to meet those companies, and actually invest that chip into the company of your choice.
Okay.
So all 10 companies will go home with some allocation of real cash, but the top three chip winners will then get on stage, pitch the audience, as well as a local celebrity judging panel. The judges will select a winner, and ultimately someone will go home with an additional $25,000.
Okay.
And we'll close things out with an after party hosted by Kermit Ruffins himself.
Wow. This is awesome. New Orleans Entrepreneur Week.
It's happening. We're really excited about this year's lineup.
Yeah, this is great. And speaking of this great opportunities for entrepreneurs in the South, tell us about those opportunities presented specifically for startup companies.
Sure thing. So a big part of what we do at New Orleans Entrepreneur Week is Congress try to provide resources to local companies. And we look at that both in terms of actual services that they can access during the week, but also cash money, because yes, that's the biggest barrier to folks growing their businesses.
Capital.
So just as the past New Orleans Entrepreneur Week 2016, we allocated just over $650,000 of cash and in-kind resources to local companies. And we're hoping to top that this year. So there are about 20 different pitch competitions that are taking place, some of which were application-based. So the community can look on our website, noew.org, for open pitch opportunities that they can still apply for. We also are hosting, for the first time ever, a marketplace where entrepreneurs can actually come and sell their products. So local jewelry makers, photographers are going to be doing on-site photography. Get your headshots come and get those taken at New Orleans Entrepreneur Week. So whether you want to sell your products, whether you're pitching for money, whether you're looking for investors, we have a little something for every type of business. So the website is really the best place to see exactly what might be the best fit for you.
Now, it's just a few days away. Is it too late to get involved? I know NOEW starts in just a few days. Is registration still open?
Registration is open and will be open. You can register all the way through Friday, March 24th.
Wow.
We're keeping it open. It is free and completely accessible. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is sign up, and you can do that through our website, noew.org, or you can do it on site. Just come on down to the Contemporary Arts Center and we'll get you signed up.
And you keep saying that it's free, and it's just so unbelievable to me because you guys, again, have been around since 2009. What's keeping NOEW free?
So New Orleans Entrepreneur Week is hosted by a small nonprofit called the Idea Village. That's where I work. And the Idea Village is all about leveraging entrepreneurship to make New Orleans a better place. And we see New Orleans Entrepreneur Week as a conduit to do that. Mm-hmm. So we raise funds throughout the year to host this awesome event, to hope that the ripple effect from this event extends far into the future. And so that's what's most important for us. We believe it's a critical piece of our event, that it remains free, that it remains accessible, that we are not excluding anyone from coming. And I think that's something we're going to carry far as well.
Great. Now, I know New Orleans is a city that people across the world love, right? So I just imagine that if I'm in South Dakota and I hear that there's an Entrepreneur Week in New Orleans, I think I'm coming down to New Orleans. Tell me, have you guys noticed an influx of entrepreneurs who aren't from the New Orleans area?
So it's really interesting you bring that up. In the last two, maybe 3 years, we've really seen an uptick in terms of the number of folks who are attending from other places, particularly entrepreneurs. I think the insight that we've seen from our data is that folks who are coming from cities across the Southeast, let's say the Mobiles, the Birminghams, the Little Rock, Arkansas, there are plenty of entrepreneurs in those cities, but they might not have the vibrant entrepreneurial ecosystem that we have here in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at New Orleans Entrepreneur Week as a way to access that. So I think we're seeing a lot of folks, both economic development professionals in those cities, as well as entrepreneurs, viewing New Orleans Entrepreneur Week as a platform for them to leverage, coming in to learn from what we've been able to accomplish here, and also hoping to leverage it as an opportunity to highlight themselves as well.
All right. Victoria, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and I hope to see all of you at New Orleans Entrepreneur Week, March 19th through the 24th.
Victoria Adams Phipps is the executive producer of New Orleans Entrepreneur Week. Visit noew.org for more information or to register. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. We'll be back with you next week here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.